describe some of the issues typically negotiated in loan documents and some of the pitfalls regarding recourse versus non-recourse carve-outs.
Sure, and I'm going to do this from a borrower's perspective and primarily with regard to permanent non-recourse debt. Non-recourse meaning that in the event of a default, typically the lender gets to take the property, but they don't get to sue any of the principals. And again, these terms, as Kelly indicated before, could be negotiated primarily in an application or a commitment, or you might negotiate them in the loan documents themselves. We find it's always better, particularly with the national life companies, to negotiate these up front in the commitment so you don't have to worry about it when you get down to the loan documentation. And it's important to know that you can negotiate, even if the lender says, we've never done that before. If your client is willing to take the time to try to protect himself up front, these lenders will negotiate, and they've all got backup provisions that they have negotiated before. So don't listen to them if they say that, that they won't negotiate.
Or move on,
yes. I'll just hit some of the highlights here since Kelly and Dave took most of the time. One of the things that we try to deal with is if there's a loss or damage to the property, it should not be solely up to the lender's discretion if they want to let you rebuild. And that's the way most loan documents will start out. So we try to negotiate provisions that say if it can be rebuilt without significant loss in income, if it's feasible from a physical standpoint, then the lender has to release the proceeds to the borrower. And then we like to stay away from matters that let the lender kind of dictate how the borrower does his business. With regard to leasing, for example, we try to make sure that unless a lease hits a certain threshold in square feet or term or is somehow out of the market as far as the terms, that the borrower can go enter into new leases without the lender's consent. Or maybe you put in there the lender shall consent to these kinds of leases. In a residential setting, typically the lender doesn't have the right to review and approve individual leases. They do have the right oftentimes to approve a form. And then transfers in closely held entities, there's typically a due on sale provision in most loan documents, and that can extend to transfers of membership interest in the borrower as well as the transfer of the real estate itself. So again, if you've got a closely held borrower particularly, you want to make sure there are carve-outs for transfers between partners, transfers between affiliates, and transfers for estate planning purposes to trusts or limited liability companies. Another issue is default and cure provisions. Most loan documents will say if there's non-payment on the date when due, they can immediately put you in default and accelerate. There may be some longer period for non-monetary defaults. We always try to get at least 10 days in written notice for non-payment and 30 days and up for other kinds of non-monetary defaults. And then I wanted to hit just a little bit, and I'm running out of time, I see, but one issue that's come up since the recession is some lenders have tried to get very creative in turning non-recourse loans into recourse loans. And this started in a couple of cases in Michigan where there was a requirement in the mortgage that the borrower maintain its status as a special purpose entity, which is an entity that owns only a certain project, and that the failure to maintain special purpose entity status made the whole loan full recourse. In this instance, one of the SPE covenants was that the borrower remain solvent, and the lender took the position that the very fact that the borrower failed to pay the loan rendered it insolvent and got the court to agree that turned the loan into a full recourse loan. The courts noted in the opinions that was an absurd result, and the Michigan legislature quickly passed a new statute that said that insolvency doesn't equal full recourse. There are other examples that I know of when that's happened. Again, I'm not going to have time to go through all of this, but if you're in that situation, try to focus on the full recourse items being allowing the lender to get loss or damage only, as opposed to having the full loan become payable by the guarantor or the borrower.